That would be nice.
Please sit down. We do not have a quorum, but we only have 1/2 hour. I have to be over in room 112 of the Capitol at 10:30. So this meeting will come to an end at a little bit before 10:30, and we have a lot of people to testify. And Representative Norton, if you would. Move your bill and introduce it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members that got out of bed this morning. This is House File 181, and it is a bill that probably most of you have seen before. I'm not going to go into great detail about the policy because we've had this through Policy and Commerce already, and most of you know the contents of the bill, and it's actually quite self-explanatory. What I do just want to say is that this bill is about providing parity in coverage for folks across the state of Minnesota. I've told my story before, and I'm not going to go into it before, but patients or children that I suppose are patients in some respect that are diagnosed with autism are often diagnosed with a service. Sometimes it's applied behavioral analysis or ABA. In my experience working with children of all incomes, often their insurance companies would turn them down for their services. And so it would be my job to help get them the services they deserved, and that meant applying for medical assistance through TEFRA in the state of Minnesota. And so people who had private pay insurance were being referred to the state and having their treatments covered by the state of Minnesota. And to me, that was a grave injustice and a shift of the burden from the insurance companies to the state of Minnesota. So after many years, and many of you have heard this bill before, we're coming back. When I first started, we were going to be about the 16th or 17th state to pass this law. We now have 33 states that have passed this law ahead of us. We are in a new world, and I do want to be clear about that. There are several states like Utah, Nebraska, Hawaii, and Minnesota right now who are taking this bill up. And the new world is that now we're going to be working within the Affordable Care Act and the exchange. And so because of that, we're still kind of trying to work through what does the mandate under the exchange look like, how do we make that work, what's the right language, and I just will let you know that I do have an amendment which missed the deadline, so I'm not going to forward it, but I believe we do have to make some changes in the way the bill is worded in order to make it comply under the new world of the Affordable Care Act and the exchange. And just in brief, what that would do is say that the only new part of the bill that is mandated would be the new services that we're asking for, which is the applied behavioral analysis, and that all other, and the bill will still say the way it's listed, all the other services that are currently being provided will continue to be provided as they currently are. So we think we need to make that change in order to have the fiscal note read correctly. And we also clarified that ASD coverage is part of mental health parity in the state of Minnesota. So I think what I would like to do is just say to you that we should treat autism like we treat other incidents. Cancer is an example that's often used. If someone is diagnosed with cancer, we don't have one cure that's right for everybody. We have a variety of treatments out there available, and we need to pick the one that is best for that individual and the type of cancer they have. And there's no guarantee that it will work or that it won't come back, but we have to give it our best shot. These children diagnosed with autism need the full spectrum of services available to them in order to get the best outcomes for the individual. And that's what we're hoping for here, that we put on the table the gold standard, which is ABA, as well as all the other therapies that are out there that have worked for students, but to have this as part of one of those options. So with that, we have several speakers who would like to share their stories. They've been told that you have limited time and that they should keep it to just a few minutes each. And so, Mr. Chair, if you would allow, I think, Tisha, and then Joe Mose and Mike Wasmer, who are in support of the bill.
Would you move your bill first?
Do we have? I did, but maybe we didn't have a quorum.
Do we have a quorum? We didn't have a quorum then. So
right.
What we do now, so if you would move your bill again, and then we'll hear
testifiers. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 181 for your approval and to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Welcome to the committee, and if you would state your name for the tape, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good morning. My name is Tisha Mehdi. My husband and I are the parent of two children, Allie and Aiden. Our son Aiden has autism. Aiden was born in 2005, developed on track and ahead of schedule. He was happy, interactive, verbal, and a loving little boy. Then shortly after his 15-month checkup, he began to regress dramatically, lost language, stopped responding to his name, stopped sleeping, began having gastrointestinal problems, became aggressive, fearful, and seemed to literally have just left the world that we all lived in. The many sleepless nights that Aiden and I shared, there was tons of time for research. My family was willing to do anything to help him. We did find a variety of possibilities, and ABA was on the top of our list, but our insurance didn't pay for it, and it was very expensive. We were blessed to be able to secure a loan for a 3-month trial to see how it went. Within 2 weeks of that ABA trial, we knew instantly. The therapy sessions were horrific, but they were amazing at the same time. Aiden was furious with the therapist, but he was actually back in our world during therapy. Even if he was only present for a short time, I knew he was still in there, and I became hopeful again. My family and I believed in ABA so much that my husband was willing to do whatever it took to get the correct insurance coverage, so a job search began. But finding insurance for ABA or autism coverage is very, very difficult. Finally, after 4 job changes, we were blessed to find a company that had a self-funded ERISA plan, and ABA was covered. We were lucky enough to get a Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance policy. However, with this new job meant many other changes. My husband had worked very hard in his career. He was in upper management, and he gave up his career to become a delivery man. That meant a huge salary cut and a work week of 15-plus hour days, 5 to 6 days a week. With the insurance coverage and ABA in place, my son made great progress, but we knew there were better programs out there for him. So in July of 2011, we moved to Minnesota, leaving behind our entire support system. However, the move was very difficult for our son. He became extremely aggressive, more so than he had ever been. July through September of 2012 was literally a continuous assault, 24 hours a day, on my husband, my daughter, and myself. My daughter spent her last summer before moving to college locked in a room, and I even sent her away with family for a week just to get a reprieve from Aiden's beatings. I was afraid of my child. His strength was frightening. Imagine for a minute being hit, kicked, punched, bit, spit on by your 6-year-old. My thoughts were, what happens when he gets bigger? What if he hurts me and I can't take care of him anymore? What do I do if he won't stop hitting me? Will the police take him away? So in September 2011, Lovas started therapy. Within weeks, the aggression decreased, and eventually it became almost non-existent. We still do have our challenges, and it pops up occasionally on some occasions and situations, but at least it's manageable. As a matter of fact, my son was actually present at the January 29th committee hearing here that I see many of your familiar faces, and he was able to sit through that. We're so thankful, even though we still have a ton of work to do, but we believe he will recover and we'll be able to live life on his terms. With that being said, even with our private insurance coverage, and we have TEFRA as a secondary coverage, our annual out-of-pocket medical expenses are extraordinary. There's details in your packet, but for example, 2012, our out-of-pocket medical expenses alone were 36.67% of my husband's 2012 gross income. So at the end of the day, we all want the best for our children. I think most of us would move heaven and earth to ensure that opportunity. This life is possible for our children with autism. Recovery does happen. All we need are the tools necessary. Some will fully recover and some will not, but the therapies will absolutely improve the quality of their life and allow them to be the best they can. I'm appealing to each of you today to please support this bill for my family, for all of those affected with autism, and for those families who are unfortunately not yet aware they will be joining the autism statistics in the near future. There must be equality between those currently receiving ABA through the MA TEFRA program and those who have private insurance. Thank you for letting me share my story, and I'd be happy to answer questions if you have any.
Given the time that we're in, we don't have time for questions, so thank you for your testimony, and I did watch your son
thank you very much.
At the other meeting. Next is Joe Moves. And you can tell me how to pronounce that by giving your name for the tape.
No, you said it correctly.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Most say
the record.
Most people say Moz, or but no, it's Moz. But hello, I am the founder of Living Proof, Joe Moves. Living Proof is an organization whose mission is to demonstrate that even children diagnosed with severe autism spectrum disorder can, if they have access to the appropriate applied behavioral analysis treatment, grow up to live productive and independent lives. I am now working and paying taxes. I am Living Proof. I have come here today in support of the autism treatment insurance mandate because I know from personal experience that appropriate treatment provided at an early age can greatly increase the chances of improvement and maybe independent living. I was diagnosed myself when I was 24 months old, and my case was so severe that I could not speak or give eye contact. I would spend most of my time staring at the wall or flapping my hands. The child psychiatrist who placed the diagnosis warned that I would be living in an institution by the time I turned 10. This real-life worst-case scenario is why I find myself blessed to be a part of a devoted family who sacrificed so much to help increase my odds of living a stable, productive life, especially when insurance coverage for autism treatment was non-existent. All expenses were paid out of pocket. After 13 months of traveling the country to consult the most respected experts in the field of child psychology and autism, my parents discovered, by pure chance, a treatment method that would eventually result in my recovery. I was one of the first participants of the Lovaas Applied Behavioral Analysis Program at UCLA after its study was completed in 1987. If I was any older than I was when I began the program, I would not be the same person I am today. The hours of therapy were long and hard, but it didn't end in the clinic. In addition to the 40-hour week in the clinic, my mom, who learned Lovaas therapy quickly, taught it to me with the same energy and passion as the therapist on campus. Getting myself to look at the therapist in the eyes was the most difficult skill to learn, but afterwards, I responded to this treatment so well that I completed the program by 8 months. By the time I entered kindergarten, I was mainstreamed to the school system without the need of an assisting aide. Since then, I have graduated with a Bachelor's of Fine Arts and now work for a respected IT company. I know that I'm not the only one who can benefit from this remarkable therapy. I have met many people affected by autism who have led successful lives. Between the times I received treatment and today, over half of the states of the Union have received and passed this insurance mandate, which has granted access for autism treatment to thousands of families that would not have been able to afford it otherwise. Our time to join this reoccurring trend has been well overdue. Minnesota provides the best health care in the country, and coverage is given for treatment and for every disease and disorder imaginable. Why ignore autism? The average cost to take care of a child with low-functioning autism is $3 million. Mandate will be a relief on our budget. It'll be a relief on our budget. But most important, it will give our children affected by autism to build a future. Treatment, no matter how intensive therapy may be, does not guarantee fast improvement or recovery. But to be given the chance to live a successful, independent life is far greater than no chance at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, and you're certainly a great example of what can be done.
Thank you.
Next we have Mike Wasmer.
Good morning, Chair Huntley and members of the committee. I'm Mike Wasmer, the Associate Director for State Government Affairs at Autism Speaks, and I'm also the parent of a child with autism. Autism Speaks is the world's leading science and advocacy organization, and our state government affairs team has played a leading role in most of the now 32 states that have enacted autism insurance reform laws, and I'm pleased to speak here today in support of House File 181. When my daughter Kate was diagnosed with autism at 2.5, she was nonverbal, and many of her developmental skills were assessed at the level of a 6-month-old. Based on her individual strengths and weaknesses, she was prescribed and received 30 hours per week of ABA. Today, she's in eighth grade, making straight A's, and she's been in regular education without an aide since first grade. Similar to Joe, given access to the prescribed treatment, she did not need special intensive education. She did not need, and she is well on her way becoming an independent tax-paying citizen and will not be reliant on state-funded adult disability services. If enacted, House File 181 would provide Minnesota's children with that same opportunity to become self-sufficient. In addition to this bill, similar legislation is currently active in 8 other states. Historical arguments against such legislation include questions about the efficacy and medical efficacy of medical necessity of ABA have largely been dismissed as the research in support of this treatment for kids with autism is overwhelming. In fact, at a hearing that I was at in Nebraska on Tuesday, all 3 major insurers in the state testified as neutral on the bill. They went on record that they were not opposed to the proposed benefits. At issue in most states is the question of cost. Independent actuarial analyses have been performed in most of the autism insurance reform bills passed, filed in the last several years. The estimated impact on premiums as a result of coverage for treatment for autism is consistently less than 1%. But more compelling is the fact now that because we do have 32 states that have enacted this legislation, we now have available actual claims data from states that were among the first to pass this, showing an average cost of coverage is 31 cents per member per month. This includes data recently reported by the Missouri Department of Insurance, which also demonstrated that the actual cost of Missouri's autism benefit represented less than 0.2% of their overall health claims costs. And based on this observation, it was the Missouri Department of Insurance conclusion that the impact on premiums as a result of that benefit would be negligible, whereas the cost of not providing the appropriate treatment to individuals with autism has been estimated to be $3.2 million per child over their lifespan. Actuarial analysis has shown that the cost of autism insurance reform could be recovered in reduction in special education and medical costs alone. So the high-cost option is not to enact this legislation. Thank you for your consideration. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you for your testimony, and now we're going to have to move on immediately to Ms. Abdul.
Representative Huntley, if I could just say that Missouri, that we just talked about, the day this bill was dropped from the conference committee report, the last time we had it in there, because the House has carried this bill for a number of years, Missouri passed it that same day.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the tape, please.
Yes. Hi, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Aidil Abdul. I am an autism mom. I have a 10-year-old son with classic autism. I am originally from Somalia, and as some of you may have heard, Somali children with autism is 7 times higher in Minnesota. And I'm also a member of the Minnesota Autism State Task Force, nominated by Speaker Zellers, and also a member of the Federal Autism Advisory Interagency Autism Task Force, nominated by the White House and Secretary Sebelius. I know it's weird. I don't know how they know me. But I agree with everybody saying, yes, autism is confusing. It's a very complex disorder. It is a worse nightmare for a parent. No one should hear your child has any medical condition, and we don't know what it is. And so I tried to email you the blog that came from Dr. Insel, the chair of National Institute of Mental Health, who's also our chair at the Federal Advisory Committee. And he basically said, we don't really know autism. There's so much disagreement. Is it a disability? Is it a difference? There are some people with Asperger's who might say, it's a difference. It's not a neurobiological disorder. We just need to make sure that our civil rights are advocated for. And then there are people who say, autism was caused by vaccines, and therefore it's an injury because my kid was fine before the vaccines. And they usually say everything the government is doing about genetics test is meaningless. They think it should be about vaccines. So, and then there are people that say it's a disorder, that we need to find a cause and a cure. So if you're thinking, if the scientists of America are that confused, imagine we as parents feel. So we don't know what it is. What we also don't know is exactly which therapy works. There are a lot of people that talk about the LOVAS study, which is 19 children in 1987, done by Dr. LOVAS of UCLA in California, that said 47% of the children that got 40 hours of therapy were able to go into mainstream kindergarten. The problem is, as you all know, the Finance Committee, you want policy and research. You would rather research to drive policy. right? So that research has never been repeated. That doesn't mean we shouldn't help children with autism, including mine, but I think it's important to do it in a way that is cost-effective, in a way that's based on science that we have now, which is very different than this legislation because it basically says unlimited. And according to Dr. Insel, according to CDC, to CMS, HRSA, everyone, including one policy advisor for the Obama administration who has a son with autism, there isn't really a science base that says 40 hours would work for a 2-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 20-year-old. Furthermore, the states that have passed the autism insurance, usually it is when it is prescribed by the by an objective doctor, not the owner of the clinic. And one analogy I like to give is if you go to the airport and there is a shoe shiner person, right? I'm betting if he every shoe he sees on the airport he thinks can use a shoe shine, right? That's his business. So my plea to you is yes, we should provide therapy that is based on science, and behavior therapy is the one that has first research, not repeated and got the same results, but it has more research than any other therapy. But it needs to be based on science and based on facts. The final thing that I really want to stress is, if you hopefully got, I'll give you a copy. I was able to contact the Center for Medicaid and Medicare, and I wanted to know, do you pay for applied behavior analysis? So hopefully you all got this. And I got this from Cindy Mann's office. She's the director of Children's Healthcare at Center for Medicaid and Medicare. And they said Minnesota does not have the authorization to cover behavior therapy. So what does this mean? It means that if we're going to approve therapy for children that are upper middle class, that have private insurance, some people need to think about, if disparity is the key, how do we make sure that children that are low income, that are financially vulnerable, how do we make sure the access to services is equal and fair from the get-go? Because we don't want to be reactive, right? We don't want to say, oh my God, disparity is happening, how do we decrease it? I would like my son, as Michael Smith with Medicaid and Michael Smith with Blue Cross, to be able to access the same services. And you are the calculator committee, I call you the finance committee, so you're going to have to figure out a way to make sure that the state pays for it as well as the private market. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And next we have Dr. Fahia.
Fahia. Now you know what it's like to speak English, right? Dr. Fahia, he's the director of the Somali community of Minnesota. He was not able to come today. But Mohammed Mahmoud, who's the director of the Somali American Parent Association, and Fahia, who's a community person, are here to testify.
Okay, would the next testifier come down then?
Good morning, everybody. I am Mohammed Mahmoud, the executive director of Somali American Parent Association. Somalis came to Minnesota 1992. From 1992 till now, they are coming in waves. So people ask me, why Minnesota? They came from Equatorial, the equator, go through Somalia. So you can imagine the equator is going through the climate which is there. In contrast with that, the climate of Minnesota, in the North Pole. So so what's the answer I have is not I don't have an answer, but what I say is that late Vice President Humphrey invited us. The reason was that he came to us Somalia. At that time I was in a high school which has been sponsored by the government of the United States of America, and he visited us there. So I was one of the guys who get the chance to say hello and speak in front of him. So that's the answer. He invited us. So we take today, we invited us. What's the problem? Those people who came here, they came here for a good hospitality, a good education, and when they came, the economy was very wonderful, and they got a job. The majority, 99% of people who came, didn't have a proper education, but they value education, so they get a good system of education. Now, the graph was going good, and it was, they were happy. But now the graph is going down when they came to know, learn the English, when they came to know some little things about their rights, very little, but not much. So, what's the problem of these parents who has an autism? They have tons and tons of problems. They don't know how to apply. They don't know what waiver they can have. They don't know what insurance they can have. Above that, they are eligible for a little thing. So before you, I could say that they are helpless, unspeakable. you can imagine how many we persuaded to come. Adil, she persuaded me and two other people, to come. Even they don't know to stand in front of you and say that we need the thing. So before you, they are very helpless people, need help. If you help, they will get the help. If you don't help, they will stay there and live that way. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. And what I'm going to do is keep the meeting going. Representative Liebling, I think, has agreed to chair it after I leave here in about 30 seconds. And so the folks that testify will be available for questions. If you have questions, you can ask those folks. And but what I'm going to do first is lay the bill over. Yeah. We still are waiting on some fiscal notes. And so House File 181 is laid over, and Representative Liebling will chair the rest of the meeting, and so that you folks can ask questions of the testifiers.
The nurses.
Okay. All right. First of all, before we go to questions, is there anyone else in the audience who wants to testify for or against the bill? I see somebody in the back. Would you come down, please? Welcome to the committee, and please give us your name.
Thank you. I am Fahil Khalif, part of the Somali community. I'm here to support Idil and the Addison families who's here today. I didn't prepare anything. I was just called last minute this morning. I really want you today to think about it. It doesn't matter who you are and where you come from. These children, at the end of the day, they need your support. And a lot of parents in the Somali community, which I believe myself, I'm an advocate and community activist in the Somali community. There's a lot of women who doesn't have access or information that we have today. So whatever you do today, think about them. It could have been your child that who's going through that today. Idil goes through every day, and many other parents who are not here today, who's not present, who doesn't speak English. What I want to add to this bill is today, please be voice for those women who doesn't have a voice. Parents, it doesn't matter, it's only women, also fathers who are out there, single fathers, who does have two children where they have the autism. Sometimes they say autism can be environment. I have two boys who are fully vaccinated. I cannot point on vaccination is the problem. But what they need is a support group. They need outreach programs. They need women and fathers who have children who have autism to come to a place where they can have information that will help them out. So today, if a parent is here who doesn't look like me, doesn't mean I'm not advocating for them. But at the end of the day, they're going through something. It's one thing. It's called autism. So all I want to say is thank you for your time, and please think about those ones who doesn't have a voice.
Thank you for your testimony. I saw a question. Representative Mack had her hand up, I believe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's actually for the author, so whenever that's appropriate.
I think we're ready for that. Go ahead, Representative Mack.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question is, just as we're here in the Finance Committee, just wondering if you can speculate or shed some light on. I know this bill was introduced on January 24th and was referred here on February 13th. Any idea why we still don't have fiscal information on this? Just, it seems a little surprising that we don't have it in front of us yet, and I understand it's a complicated issue. But if you could shed any light, or maybe even if you have any insight into what you expect that fiscal note to say.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mack. I don't exactly know why it's not complete, except I have had several meetings as we've gone, and I will say we changed the bill as we moved along, too. When we realized that CGIP on January 1st or 15th or whatever date it was in January had dropped it. Oh, my. When we realized that that CGIP had dropped ABA therapies, which they had been traditionally covering all along in January, that changed the bill, so we had to remove the exemption for CGIP. And so that caused another series of changes that need to be made. And I do think part of it, as I mentioned earlier, is the complexity of now working within the exchange and the ACA. These four states that I mentioned, Utah, Nebraska, Hawaii, and Minnesota, are all now working under the ACA for the very first time. So what we're doing is putting, because we didn't pass this a few years ago, we're putting the mandate in after the ACA and after the essential benefit set has been chosen rather than before. And so it makes for a whole different calculation. And there's still a question as to whether actions we take here with the mandate will apply in and out of the exchange or just in. Those are questions that are still being looked into, and I know calls have been made even to the federal level to get some clarification. So I think that's part of what's held it up is the changes that we've made and that we're working under a new structure for the first time.
All right. Follow-up, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that makes a lot of sense. I guess, do you know if that fiscal note, obviously waiting for decisions from the federal government in terms of the essential benefits that, will that fiscal note, I don't know, this probably isn't customary, will it run a scenario where if it's not in the essential benefits set, what the cost will be to the state? Will there be any information available? We'll have that idea, being as we're budgeting for the next biennium when the essential benefit will be in place.
Representative Norton.
Madam Chair, I think they are looking at a number of scenarios and trying to figure out how this will roll out. So, yes, I anticipate them doing some of that work.
Okay.
But sure, it's still in the works. And I can say, Representative Mack, and sorry, Madam Chair, I do know that they are starting to look at some preliminary numbers with the CGIP, that portion. And I know they're running into the millions of dollars, but again, they're still trying to look at do they have the formula right? And are they offsetting that with the differences with TEFRA, because there will be an offset with TEFRA. So they are looking at it, and I do know it's in the millions, and we will have our hands full.
Okay, because Madam Chair,
Representative Mack,
if I understand correctly, if we pass this and the plans are mandated to cover it and then it's not included in the essential benefits set, the state will have to make up the difference and continue to cover that mandate, but it will be at the state's expense. Is that correct?
Madam Chair.
Representative Norton.
Yes, I believe that's my understanding. The question, though, is, and which is why I have that amendment, to make certain that we're not saying we're going to cover all the things that they've traditionally covered, but that we want to make sure that it's just the new additional, and I don't think the bill is clear on that yet, which is why I had that amendment. And we can move that if it makes it to the omnibus bill, given its fiscal impact. So you'll see it again, I think, when we move beyond.
And one last question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Last question. On the issue of CGIP, I haven't followed this quite as closely as I probably should have and will from here on out, but I'm just trying to understand. You addressed this issue as being an issue of parity in insurance, and so I'm trying to follow the history a little bit, and something changed, you said, on January 1st with CGIP. Could you just shed a little bit of light and what this bill, how this bill regards CEGIP. My understanding is it does not cover it, and I'm wondering if not, why not at this point? I would imagine it's a cost issue, but anything you can shed would be great.
Representative Norton.
Madam Chair and Representative Mack, actually it does impact CEGIP. It did not originally. Our initial bill exempted CEGIP because it already covered it. Because of the changes that were made last year when Blue Cross Blue Shield dropped their coverage of autism, CEGIP had a choice apparently as to whether they wanted to take the standard Blue Cross Blue Shield policy or add autism in once it had been dropped, and they chose to just take the standard policy, which meant our historical coverage of ABA and other therapies, which were, and I do want to point this out, it's individualized. It's not just blanket, everybody gets it. It's individualized in what's prescribed for the child. When I found that out, of course, I didn't want to exempt CEGIP. I want to make sure that our employees' children are covered as well. So that will be a large fiscal impact, and actually it would be a nice test case for the state of Minnesota, because this is something that we have data on, and I've asked MMB to look at this. We have actual data in the state of Minnesota for all of our employees, which is a large pool of people that have had this coverage all along. Now they've dropped it for 2 months. I asked, is it too soon to go back and find out if it's had an impact on the, you know, at all on claims? They should have some real numbers for us. So they said it's a little early yet, but I do think that's something that we can look at, that we have actual access to. So,
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just just a comment and a question. The I was very impressed with some of the testimony brought by, and again, we have strengths and weaknesses. Mine happens to be weaknesses with names. I can handle Grunhagen, but some of these Somali names I get a hard time with. But I mean, to the degree that you can, but she did an excellent job, I thought, and sort of the other individual. But degree that you can work with them to address some of that, and I think some of your comments. And Representative Norton, you're 10 times more versed on this issue than I am. I'm just a lay person. But isn't, I don't know if government's going to be able to fund all of the needs in this particular situation, much, we got unlimited needs, not only here, but all across our budget. And is there a foundation, a tax deductible foundation? I see the people of the state of Minnesota to be some of the most generous and kind and people in the nation, along with our corporations. They're very socially conscious. And do we have a foundation in Minnesota or nationally that we can tie into to try to address some of these needs other than just, through the government or through driving up health insurance premiums higher for everybody else?
Representative Norton.
Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, well, I was very pleased with the support that I heard for the bill this morning, and I think that bodes well, and I think we can come to terms in agreement. I think we have Autism Speaks, who is here, which is a national corporation, a nonprofit. We also have AWSM, a local group, and there are support groups in communities as well. We have several in Rochester, one that's called Social Odyssey, that's for high-functioning autism and individuals with Asperger's, and that's true around the state. So there are support groups. The support groups can't pay for services. And that's really what we're getting to. And Representative Grunhagen, I know you're very fiscally conservative. But what we've done in this state is set up a system where people that are turned down by insurance come to the state and get covered. Mm-hmm. They come and they apply through TEFRA to get the services that they need. Rather than having it spread out and have the insurance companies and the families who paid their premiums diligently and then happen to have a family that's diagnosed, have that insurance company pick up the tab as they should. We've allowed them, because we are a very generous state, we've allowed them to come to Minnesota and apply for MA through TEFRA instead. And so we did pick up the tab on this, and now we're just saying, let's share the load.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, Madam Chair, and to the author. Yeah, I agree with you to a certain degree, but we have AMCHA, which my understanding is does cover all that. Unfortunately, with the ACA, we're doing away with AMCHA, something that's worked well and has been supported by our private insurance market and kept things in check for people with uninsurable conditions. So I would strongly recommend that we don't do the ACA, keep AMCHA in force, and continue to work with what actually works rather than, in theory, what doesn't work. Anyway, final comment. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunhagen, we have to live in the reality of today, and you're
Amen.
Right, AMCHA's disappearing.
All right, I haven't seen any other members, no other questions, so I'm going to, we're past the testimony, sir. I think we're way over time, too, so I think the bill's been laid over, so there's nothing to decide here this morning. So thank you, members, and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.